All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of I Can Steal That, the true crime podcast that's never too heavy. I'm your host, Pete Stegmeier. Episode number 52. That's like one a week for a year. I'm pretty excited about that. This, of course, this show is a little older than 4 years, if you include the weird break from the Federal Reserve. But I mean, I feel like that still counts. So we're gonna go with that. I'm very excited about this. Today we are going to be talking about maybe the most beautiful watch ever made. Besides, of course, the lovely ones that you can get from Zarek using the code Pete or Steel for 15% off. But this watch is like no joke, the most beautiful watch that's probably ever been made. It belonged to Marie Antoinette. And I'm very excited to bring out our guest who I'm just giving total ownership to all things Marie Antoinette at this point. He was with us for the affair of the diamond necklace. He was also with us for the original Italian Job episode. He is perhaps the show's best friend and is the host of the fake news comedy show every Tuesday at Greenwich Village Comedy Club. Stephen Cohen, how's it going?
It's going great.
Oh, that rhymed. I like that.
It rhymes really easy with a lot of words. It's a weird last name.
Yeah.
I'm also still pushing for you to host a monthly show with me at a cigar bar if we can ever find the right cigar bar and just have stand-ups blowing smoke and blowing jokes.
I would absolutely love that. That sounds incredible.
If a cigar bar is listening right now, please contact Pete or me.
Let's make it happen. I'm super excited about that, but what do you know about horology?
Is that like horoscopes, the study of them?
It is actually the study of watchmaking.
Oh, only what I learned from the comic book Watchmen.
Actually, I feel like there was a little bit of watch stuff in that one.
Yeah, yeah. Not a lot, but that's all that I know.
Okay.
Dr. Manhattan's dad is a watchmaker.
That's right. That's right. And that's how he like builds himself back together because of all those small pieces. That's right.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Oh, wow. That darn graphic novel's so good.
It really is incredible.
Okay. Oh, man.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. So today we are going to be talking about probably the most complex watch ever made, like in the history of the world. And I'm going to also throw this out there. Probably the most beautiful.
Wow.
The watch is absolutely insane. It's called the Breguet number 160, the Grand Complication. Although it's commonly referred to as either the Marie Antoinette or the Queen. A lot of times, like, we'll just call this watch the Queen, because that's typically how it's referred to in,
wow,
in watch circles and such.
Okay.
And the reason that it's called Breguet number 160 is because it was the 160th watch that Swiss watchmaker Abraham Louis Breguet made.
Abraham Louis?
Abraham Louis, it might be Louis. I'm going to assume it's Louis because of the French. And then Breguet or Breguet.
That's a hell of a name.
It really is. I'm going to go with Breguet just because my wife's Italian and Breguet.
It sounds like bruschetta.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Yeah, the whole name is Abraham Louis Breguet. I want to have dinner with this guy and have his mom make her special Breguet bruschetta.
I think that's the way that's how I would do it. And okay. So this watch, just an absolute marvel of engineering. We're going to get into the theft, but first I really want to build the stakes and I really want to describe this watch, because it's just like the diamond necklace that Marie Antoinette rightfully like turned down the commission of, but had built for her anyways. This is another one of those. And this This watch was actually commissioned in 1783 by Count Hans Axel von Fersen, who was allegedly one of Marie Antoinette's lovers.
Oh, okay.
Okay. The problem is that the watch was so complex and like so perfect that it didn't get finished until 36 years after Marie Antoinette, or 34 years after Marie Antoinette had been executed.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, it ended up finally being finished in 1827. And it took 40 years to build this watch. It actually took so long that Bruget actually died, and his son had to work on it the last 4 years.
So who is it even being made for at this point?
I think at this point it's just being made to see like if it can be done.
Okay.
Because this is, I mean, like this, let's get into like the features that this watch has. Because this watch is comprised, it has 823 individual components. And it's not huge. Like you would think that something like this would have to be like very big. And it contained every single, like literally every single function that a watch could have at the time, this watch had. Like the phrase, like all the bells and whistles, probably literally comes from this watch. And some of the things that this watch had as features include obviously the clock. It had a star map that was accurate. It had a constant state of winding. So it was like one of the first like automatic style watches that it was like easier to wind. It had a perpetual calendar. It had a minute repeater. It had a chronograph so you could like stopwatch things. It had a power reserve. It had like
some James Bond stuff at that time.
Oh, I'm not even getting to the crazy stuff yet.
What?
It had what's called parachute. But that was like a shock protection system. So like, you know, those old Discmen that
had, like, I thought you said it had a parachute for a second. And I was like, I'm not on drugs. What?
No, okay. That would be pretty nuts, but it was called the parachute. And that was it was something that Bruget actually invented for this watch. It was his shock protection system. It had a chime so that it would actually like make sounds on the hour. It did have automatic winding. It had an independent second hand, which at the time, watches didn't have. And maybe most impressively was it had a thermometer. So you could tell the time, you could tell the temperature, you could do all the stuff with this watch. And because it was so beautiful, they didn't hide the movements behind like the watch face. Like the watch face is actually sapphire crystal so that you could see everything working all the time. And like they had to use like gold, platinum, rubies, sapphires, but like this thing was so complex that even like some of these like sapphires and rubies and things like that were used for like their chemical components or like their anti-friction components instead of their beauty. So like even the diamonds or even the sapphires had like, you know, industrial purpose. And
this thing just sounds ridiculous, but I just want to step back and remind everyone listening that Bruget created something called parachute. I feel like there has to be a third chute. Like something is going to end with a hard T. That's two syllables in this. I don't know why. I have not read. This is the first time I've not read a story or known the story beforehand. So I'm learning with you guys. It's just as exciting for me as for you.
I like that. And also, this watch featured 23 different complications. Which is pretty crazy. Like that's like this thing was just basically when this thing was being built, they said, don't worry about time, don't worry about budget, just get this thing done. And that's why it took 40 years. And at the time of its like currently it's valued at about $30 million.
Oh.
At the time it was still astronomically expensive. I think it was like 30,000 francs, which is just an absolutely unreal amount of money, back in the 1700s and 1800s when this watch was around. And like, just as another indicator of how insanely priced this was, the second most expensive watch that Bruget made, it was his number 92, which was like another like critically acclaimed watch that everybody in the world like knew as beautiful. That one only sold for 4,800 francs. So this one was more than six times more expensive. And yeah, so basically the you've got this watch, and it's built for Marie Antoinette, but unfortunately she dies pretty much as soon as the watch is commissioned. 34 years after she's executed, the watch is completed. There was like a 7-year period of exile. That's why like the dates didn't quite match up, where Bruget was actually exiled for his support of the French court. But then after the revolution died down and things like that, he came back and completed work on the watch. And the watch actually stayed in the company's possession, like the Bruget company, until 1887, when it was sold to a guy named Sir Spencer Brunton.
So it was asked to be made, but she had not paid for it at the time?
Yes. Well, Marie Antoinette, she didn't commission this watch. Like, it was her alleged lover that commissioned it for her.
Okay. Right. That's right.
And so, like, she honestly might not have even known that this watch existed.
Yeah. And I mean, it might not even have been her lover. There were so many people probably claiming to be her lover that she'd never even met.
Yes. I mean, it was definitely somebody in her court that she knew, but whether or not the nature of the relationship, I have no idea. And I'm not going to speculate, because I feel like Marie Antoinette gets a raw enough deal.
Okay. Fair enough. I won't speculate either, just for the sanctity of the show.
I appreciate that. That's like, if things go sideways here, I want to maybe move to France. So I need to like keep the French citizenry, like, you know, firmly in my camp.
Yeah. And this is the only podcast where I've never said anything inappropriate that I've been on. And I want to keep this my classiest podcast. So,
okay. Well, in about an hour, I'm going to ask you what you think about Italians. That's not true. Anyways, so after the watch is sold in 1887 to Sir Spencer Brunton, it eventually gets its way into the collection of a Bruget expert. Like, he's a watch collector, and he specifically specializes in Brugets. And that was a guy named Sir David Lionel Solomons. And after that, it makes its way into the L.A. Meyer Institute for Islamic Art, which is a museum in Israel. And so this is where the watch kind of sits and is on display for several decades. Now, let's get to the actual theft itself. So on the evening of April 15th, 1983, a sedan drives through the streets of Jerusalem towards the L.A. Meyer Museum for Islamic Art. And like, the museum is a 3-story building that just had like this crazy beautiful collection of art from around the Muslim world. And it spanned like centuries. So there were things dating back to basically the birth of Islam.
Wow.
And like, because, you know, because of the Muslim world's, you know, love and things like that of like science and mathematics and things like that, they had one of the world's most impressive watch collections. Like, a lot of them were made around the Muslim world, but they also had the Marie Antoinette, or the Queen. And the collection of watches that this museum had is probably, at the time, the most expensive in the world. Like, it's nuts how many watches they have.
I mean, just by having a $30 million watch, you have to figure, I mean, what's the second most expensive watch in the world?
I believe they're...
Like, oh, you actually know?
Yeah, Walt Disney had a Mickey Mouse watch, but the minute hand, like, it did, like, the Nazi salute. And... No, I'm just kidding. But Walt Disney was anti-Semitic, so when it's
yes, yeah, yeah. I was following you. I totally believed this.
that's good. Please don't sue me, Disney.
I just messaged my Jewish comics group chat as you were saying that. I was like, can you guys believe? Now they're all. I've got to tell them to stop. Okay. Whew.
Fair enough. Okay, so the driver pulls up to the building, and he parks a car. Once the car's parked, he gets out and he takes a small hydraulic tire jack from the trunk. Just like, you know, basically one of those little little hydraulic jacks that you'd use if you had a flat. But what he does is there's an iron fence protecting the building. And he places the jack sideways between two of the wrought iron bars and starts pumping the jack. And eventually, like pretty quickly, he's able to like pop one of the bars of the fence out, just enough for him to squeeze through. And so he slinks through the fence and he gets to a window and takes a set of hooks and actually installs a rope ladder. And he's able to climb about 10 feet up and then uses a screwdriver to open up a window and silently crawl into the museum.
I just want to point out to the audience who were all like, well, so what? You guys can't silently do anything. You can't silently get up and not wake up your spouse to like surprise them in the morning for a birthday. Okay. That's ridiculous. That's so difficult.
Well, unfortunately for the museum and fortunately for the thief, their security system, like, it was good that he was silent, but it probably wasn't necessary because the museum's security system sucked. It was very problematic. That it was like there was spotty in a lot of places where like the motion detectors didn't work, the alarms weren't necessarily connected to things. Even some of the display cases just like weren't hooked up to the security system. And so the thief actually spends a couple hours inside the museum, which is just an amazingly long time. Like the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, like they were stealing stuff for 81 minutes, and that felt like a lifetime. This guy's in this museum for a couple hours, and the security is not doing the rounds. They're not really doing anything. And so as a result, he's got a lot of time, and he goes and steals a bunch of different works of priceless art. And then right before he leaves, he goes over to the back of the museum where the watches are being held and discovers that these watches also are not even hooked up to the security system.
What? So,
yeah. You've got a $30 million watch. Like you don't even hook it up to the security system. That's kind of crazy. And so he ends up taking about half of the watches. He pockets the watches. There's a joke there somewhere that I'm like, that's not going to be my bad joke of the episode because that's just hat country. But
was
yeah.
Was anyone watching him during any of this?
No.
Sorry, that was another. Okay, that was a bad hack pun. Okay, keep going.
Come
on. We'll keep going. Sorry.
Okay, I can just redo this episode. But. Yeah, so he takes about half of the watches on display, including the queen, gets back to his car, and he steals so much stuff, by the way, that it takes him several trips to get all the stuff into his car. And
what? Where is anyone?
Definitely not keeping watch. God, you guys deserve better than this. I understand that was a bad joke. It was right there. Anyways.
That was an honest laugh on my part, but I do want to say I've been taking antihistamines because I'm having allergies. But I probably still would have laughed at it anyways.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem. While we're paused for a moment, I just want to say I Googled while you were talking. There are 9 watches, according to WealthyGorilla.com, that are worth more than $10 million.
That's insane.
In the world. And I actually found 2 watches, according to this website, that are more expensive, but they they aren't, they're just like more expensive because of the amount of diamonds and not because they do anything. Like they just look cool, but they're just a watch.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the Breguet Grande Complication Marie Antoinette, and it not only looks super amazing and cool, but also does all those things.
Yeah, like there's definitely like it's kind of hard to describe the value of watches because yeah, like somebody like Hublot can come out and like make a watch that like only Floyd Mayweather is going to buy that's like covered in diamonds, and yeah, it's technically more expensive, but it's not like this.
I mean, they're just you know, a bunch of diamonds, and it does look cool, but it doesn't look as cool as the Marie Antoinette, and it doesn't do anything other than act like a watch.
Yeah, there's some crazy ones out there. Like I myself am like, I love watches. I love like really fancy clocks and stuff like that. Like I don't usually wear watches, which is an issue, except for Zarek. Use the code Pete or the code Steel for 15% off. But anyways,
that's how I got mine.
Nice.
Use your Pete code, not the Steel one. I didn't know you could also use. Why do you have two? Well, anyways, keep going with the story. I'm slowing things down.
All right, no worries. Yeah, so there are expensive watches, but this is like this watch is in a league of its own. And like I do actually like my favorite. When we're done with this, I'll tell you the story of my favorite clock in the world.
Okay,
because I get like I just nerd out about this stuff. Like I love like the Jacob and Company and like the Piaget and like all of these like crazy like complicated watches. So. Anyways, sorry. So I'm like super excited about this one. And basically the thief, he loads up the car, and once everything is in there, he just closes the trunk, drives off, and disappears into Jerusalem traffic. And the next day, authorities and museum officials discover the theft, and they're stunned. Like they'd had the watch collection insured, but the entire collection was only insured for $700,000, which is insane. Again, because like one of the watches by itself is worth $30 million.
What was even the point of paying for the $7,000?
Yeah, like $700,000 isn't going to get you like most of the watches that were stolen were worth more than that by themselves.
Ah.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And so the museum and police, like they want to get this, solved as soon as possible. So they actually hire some former Mossad operatives to assist in the investigation. But the thief, like he was very thorough, and he actually, like he didn't leave pretty much any physical evidence, and there were no witnesses. So they had nothing to go on. And basically, the police kind of have to adopt a strategy because, like, there's no fingerprints, there's no camera footage because the security system was so bad. And the only thing they can really do at this point is kind of send out feelers to people in the watch community around the world being like, hey, like, if you see the Marie Antoinette, like, it's very clearly stolen. But, like, that watch isn't – you can't sell that watch because anybody that knows – anything about watches is going to know that watch. Like it's a one of a kind. But they start checking auctions and marketplaces basically to see if any of the watches come in. And if anything credible did come in, the authorities would travel usually to Europe, sometimes to Asia. They would get tips for Europe and Asia, but like it took a really credible tip for them to get there. And even then, when they would arrive, they never found any of the watches. Over a span of the next 25 years, not a single lead panned out. Ugh. Which is crazy. But finally, in 2006, the L.A. Meyer Museum gets contacted by a lawyer. And the lawyer says that he's seeking to sell back the artifacts on behalf of an anonymous seller. And the museum, like as you do, like pretty much immediately calls the police. And they identify the seller because they're able to get some information from the lawyer because he's not a very good lawyer.
It's Rudy Giuliani.
It is Rudy Giuliani.
He's messaging them from Four Seasons Landscaping.
That between that and the boat getting stuck in the Suez Canal, like those are the two funniest things that have ever happened, and they happened within a year of each other.
I mean, and Rudy Giuliani getting caught on Borat trying to take his pants off in the same year for Rudy Giuliani.
It didn't even affect him.
The boat did not have any weird sexual events, but Rudy Giuliani did. So I feel like he won, but fair enough. The Suez Canal thing was crazy. The memes were insane.
It was a good week. But yeah, so the museum, they contact authorities and they're pretty quickly able to identify the seller as an American high school teacher named Nili Shamrat. And so Shamrat is brought into custody pretty quickly and tells the police that the watches belong to her husband, who had since passed. And typically, the police aren't going to believe that. But her husband happened to be a well-known Israeli thief named Naaman Diller. And he had told her, he made a deathbed confession to his wife about having pulled off the heist. And so Diller reveals to her on his deathbed that he had been keeping the artifacts and the watches in a storage unit in Tel Aviv. And when police pretty much immediately like swarm this, the storage unit, and to their astonishment, they find all of the pieces tucked away in boxes and all of the watches like wrapped in newspaper. Like they were taken very good care of, except for the fact that they were in a shoebox and in a storage unit. But that was that's one of the things that I kind of like about this heist, because with all the watches, like including the Marie Antoinette, they discovered like handwritten notes from Diller, of how each and every one of the watches worked, how to maintain them, ooh, how and when to oil and wind them. Like he was a thief, he stole the watches like for the watch's sake. Like he genuinely loved these watches, and like he wasn't trying to sell them. He just was like, I can steal the most beautiful watch in the world, and I can go to my storage unit and like look at it and wind it and oil it. And he took care of every single one of these watches like perfectly.
Wow.
Which, I mean, if you're gonna steal something like that, like I want you to be like that guy, because then, you know, kind of no harm, no foul a little bit. And also I would much rather have something like that than, you know, some guy like the people that broke into this Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum who just like, you know, cut a Rembrandt out of their frame and have it like sitting in like a storage unit in Dumbo, like where it's like wrapped up and the paint's cracking and like not being taken care of. Like at least this guy took care of the stuff that he stole because he cared. You know, like just care is all I want.
This is the most beautiful crime podcast in America. If you're going to be a criminal, just care.
That's all I ask. Like, don't steal from people that can't afford to have it stolen from them. And like, don't steal just to be a dick. Like, steal because like you care. Like you need, like you have a burning passion to have one of the copies of The Scream like in your bathroom. Like that's like, just give a damn.
Yeah. Or you know that a river belongs closer to Florence than it does to Pisa, and that Pisa's a bunch of jerks.
Those Pisans, I hate them to this day.
Yeah. We were going to talk about Italians later, but here they are.
God, I would love to get this. I could not have this podcast banned in Italy because there's so much beautiful art there. Like, oh man, Italy is like just, oh, it's one of my favorite places in the world. I love Italians. Like we'll come up with like,
but not those paisans.
Yeah, not the Pisans, but yeah. Everybody else's.
And their Leaning Tower of nothing.
Everybody else is great.
Yeah.
We're going to start shit with South Dakota. Like, that god-awful waste of a state that shouldn't even exist. South Dakota only exists because the Senate wanted two extra Republican senators. So they split Dakota Territory into two states. That is a true story. And it's a bastard state.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never heard that before, but that really checks out with my feelings towards South Dakota.
That's fair. At least the North has natural beauty.
Does South Dakota not have its own like mountain with precedents on it?
South Dakota had to get like all gimmicky. Like they had to do Mount Rushmore. They had to do Wall Drug. Like congratulations. It's a CVS with gimmicky shit. It's covered.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
I'm coming for you.
You're really going after South Dakota. The only podcast banned in South Dakota. I can steal that.
I would love that. Oh, man. But anyways, let's get back to this. I'm sorry, guys. I usually don't go on rants like this. I needed an outlet.
No, I think your entire audience hates South Dakota as much as you, and they were waiting for it.
Hey, you know what? If you're listening to this episode, contact us at I Can Steal That on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Email me at iCanSteal That.com. Whatever. Just get in touch with me. I'm easy to find. And tell me why you hate South Dakota, and I will send you a sticker.
Yeah. And please use hashtag South Dakota sucks.
We're going to do hashtag worst Dakota.
That's better. Hashtag worst Dakota. I'm going to post tonight worst Dakota. All right.
I like it. So let's get back into this though, because like Diller did have a passion for these watches, but he also had a passion for theft in general. He was something of a legend in the Israeli criminal underground. He was renowned for his ability to crawl through tight spaces. Like that was one of his like big claims to fame. He was kind of like the guy in Ocean's 11 that they called the Grease Man. Because he could just do that. He was also a master forger, and he was very resourceful. His most famous theft, besides, because this didn't come out until after his death that he had stolen the Marie Antoinette watch. His most famous heist that he was alive and got credit for was a 1967 bank robbery in Tel Aviv, where he spent 5 months tunneling into the vault. And he had he even hooked up like an elaborate like oxygen delivery system. So like he had oxygen lines running that he could like hook up an acetylene torch to, but also breathe through. And so when the L.A. Meyer Museum was robbed, Diller was one of the he was high up on the suspects list. But because of his ability to convincingly forge documents, He actually forged passport stamps that showed him out of the country during the heist. And his alibi was solid enough. He was able to produce enough fake documents from his fake travel abroad to get completely removed from the suspects list, pretty much immediately. And so while there was initially suspicion around his wife's desire to sell the pieces back, because she did to her credit, she had the lawyer be like, hey, if you want these back, you can pay me for them, which I kind of get. you gotta see at least. You're never gonna get money if you don't ask for it. But eventually investigators realized that she had nothing to do with the crimes. She was trying to capitalize on them, but she did not steal anything. So she was not charged with anything in connection, which is kind of fair. Although she did get fired from her teaching job because of the case, because all of a sudden the teachers got $50 million in stolen watches. Not a great look.
Mom, Dad, my teacher got fired. It turns out that she's an international criminal. How do you have that conversation with your kid and try to explain to your kids that she's not a bad person, but her husband was, and she was kind of an accomplice, but she wasn't totally horrible. How do you have that? I'm not a parent. I'll never know.
I don't know. I had a lot of unscrupulous teachers. So I honestly,
do you feel like you had any teachers that were more unscrupulous than this woman trying to sell watches back to a museum?
No, like if I found out that like my, if I found out that like my kids' teachers, I don't have kids, but if I found out that like my kids' teachers were like,
well, you like, would have them on your podcast. That's not fair.
I absolutely would. Like, I would be like, okay, like, did they tell you anything about the history of the watches? Like, did they turn it into a teachable moment? Like, I don't care about the crime.
Why are
like,
you listening in class? I think you need to take more Adderall. You don't have any details.
That's exactly. I'd be like, your teacher is fascinating. Like, go ask them everything. Like, let them.
Little Bruchette Stegmeier.
Yeah. All we had was like, we had like a gym teacher that was like almost definitely sleeping with all the girls on the soccer team in high school. Like that's, and everybody, like nobody thought it was weird. Like that was, so yeah, if my teacher, my kid's teacher has $50 million in stolen watches, like all that's going to do is get me to go to more parent teacher conferences. Like it's going to make me a more involved parent and it's going to help my kids' education. But all right. The artifacts, like all the stuff from the museum is also in the storage unit. The artifacts and the watches did get returned to the L.A. Meyer Museum where they remain on display to this day. But now they've got a working alarm system.
Did they finally get the insurance that they need?
Well, they got the, I would assume so, but they got the, maybe they used that $700,000 to put down as a little nice nest egg for the, yeah, I don't even know what the hell they're doing with that now. Like, I hope they have better insurance.
Man.
But they, watchmakers in Bruget, they did actually, and like the one of the chairmen from Swatch, like helped with this. Like they wanted a copy made in 2005, and this time, like using modern technology, they were able to do it in 3 years. And they actually presented it in an oak case. And what's kind of cool, but also kind of sad, is the oak for this case came from Marie Antoinette's favorite tree in France.
Wow. Jeez.
But
it's such a nice touch.
It kind of is a cool touch. Like as long as the tree, I hope the tree's still alive. I don't know if that's, I don't know how long oaks live. I don't think
you have to kill the tree to take that.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think I'm sure they did it the best way they could. So I think that was kind of cool, but yeah, so that is the story of the grand complication.
I feel like my episodes with you are always your shortest because most of the time I'm just like, I can't talk. Like I can't even make jokes because the stories are too ridiculous and I just make noises in the background.
No, you're like one of my favorite, you're one of my favorite guests. Like this is really good.
No, you're one of my favorite podcasts, so don't worry about it. I'm just saying, like, some of the other comics, come on, it's a little bit longer. Like, they've got, you know, more jokes to punch in, but the stories are just so ridiculous, and it's so crazy how it slowly opens up. I wish I knew how the thief and his wife met. How does a teacher marry an international thief?
Well, you got to have, like, one cool... you got to have like one cool person in the relationship and then like one nerd. So like, I think a teacher with a thief like works really well. Like my wife is a therapist. Like she like breaks people's psyche down and like understands them on like a level that I could never, like I do this and I do cybersecurity. Like there's nothing fun or interesting about me. You got to have like, but my wife, like she could like, she could probably track down a serial killer. Like that's pretty cool.
You guys would actually be a pretty good anti-crime team, cybersecurity and serial killer stalker downer. I would watch that TV show.
We should write it. It'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Guys, please post on Twitter hashtag Worst Dakota and please name the TV show. No, the TV show is just named Worst Dakota. It's about the Dakota family. God.
It writes itself.
It sells itself.
Oh, man. So do you want me to tell you the story real quick of my favorite clock?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, perfect. And all of our listeners just tuned out. No, but if you ever get a chance, like if you're ever in Prague.
Because a lot of these people that are listening, they love watches, but they hate clocks.
You need to be able to wear it.
Yeah.
So there's a clock in the city or the town square of Prague.
Mm-hmm.
It's an astronomical clock, and it's like probably 5 stories tall. But it's got to be the most beautiful clock that I've ever seen in my life. And it's like so ridiculously complicated. So like one of the things that it has is it has a name day clock. So like it has like – it's got like a wheel on it that every day the hand advances one space. And anybody that is born on that day in Prague, like back in the day at least, that was your name. So it was like, you know, January 17th, like, congratulations, you're Mark or Marcia.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where like name day comes from. But what made this clock even crazier was the astronomical components to it. So it could track the zodiac. It could obviously track time and stuff like that. But it also had this like crazy representation of the sun and the moon, where the moon would like rotate based on the phase of the moon. So if it was like a waxing gibbous, it would be a waxing gibbous on the clock. It would also move in and out depending on its relative position in orbit around the Earth and like in the sun. So as the year gets longer and shorter, the bar that the sun and the moon are on are going, moving in and out to represent that. It's like astronomically perfect.
Yeah.
And
what you're speaking of.
Yeah. It's so beautiful. And
it's gorgeous.
One of the things that like my favorite story about this gets a little gruesome. If you're listening, but this was built like back at a time where it really put Prague on the map, because people came from all over the world or all over Europe, at least to see this clock. Mm-hmm. And when it was done, the town folk or the city leaders of Prague, they took the clockmaker and they're like, hey, like, you know, thanks so much for building this. And
oh, that's so nice.
Yeah. No, they treated him great.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. They definitely weren't so afraid that he would build another nicer clock in a different town that would make people not want to go to Prague. They definitely were scared of that. So they like,
where was he from?
You know, I don't remember where he was from, but I don't think he was from Prague.
Okay.
But after he built the clock, the townsfolk actually were afraid of him building a nicer.
You were being sarcastic?
I was being sarcastic.
Okay.
As being facetious, if we're using clock parlance. that was a good joke, though. So that's
face. Yeah, that was not hacky. Facetious. Okay, you got me.
Okay. But they actually blinded him and cut out his tongue so that he couldn't. What? Yeah, basically, they did this so that he wouldn't be able to build a new clock for somebody else and like steal their thunder. But
that seems like a big jump up. Why didn't they just put him in jail?
They weren't really thinking.
I guess not. Man.
But basically, like, after this guy gets blinded and after he loses his tongue and stuff like that, he crawls back into the clock. Like, cause he knows, like, he's spent so many years like working on this thing that he like knows it inside and out. And he actually like crawls into the clock and like, there's like that one piece that like makes everything work. Like, you know, like the piece. And he takes it out like all by touch and then like breaks it into 1,000 pieces, like breaks it as much as he possibly can. And then like the tour guide said that he willed himself to die. Who knows if that's true? Like he probably, you know, committed suicide or
something. I've done that before several times. in the last year during a pandemic, and it hasn't happened. So I don't know how possible that is, unless he's just very powerful.
I like to think that he's just very petty, and he's I think he did it. He's just like, nope, and then but that was it. And basically, the clock was so complex that it didn't run right for over 100 years. Like, they would bring people in to try to fix this thing and be like, okay, make it work like it should, and nobody could figure out how it did it. Either that, or everyone was like, yeah, I'm absolutely not going to fix this thing for you guys. I like to think that maybe somebody could have done it, and they're just like, I'm not. Like, I heard what happened to Mark, so I'm not going to fix this for you. But that's basically what happened. And then, now it runs. Now it actually runs, I believe, digitally. So they're able to hook everything up. But it took over 100 years for them to be able to get it working again, like it should have been working. Like, that's how crazy complex it was.
And that's why you don't blind a man and cut out his tongue just to stop him from competing with you.
I didn't think that had to be said, but yeah, that's a good takeaway.
Yeah. Well, it needed to be said in Prague a few hundred years ago.
It did. Like, he's honestly lucky they didn't throw him out of a tall window, because that's something of a national sport in Prague.
Is that defenestration?
Defenestration, yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful word.
The same tower where the name day clock sits, mm-hmm. actually has been home to, I think, 3 heads of state have been killed by getting thrown off that tower. Like, it was a very interesting tour.
That, if you're really ever taught them a lesson to always defenestrate people instead of blinding them and cutting out their tongues, much more effective.
You know, it's sometimes you got to work smarter, not harder.
I do. I also love the walking and talking tours. Whenever I go to a different city, that's what my dad and I do. And my favorite part is when my dad gets too comfortable and starts walking backwards in front of the tour guide, having a conversation with the tour guide and trying to figure out which way the tour guide's going to turn, because my dad is now in front of the tour guide walking backwards.
That's, you know, like, that's risky, because I feel like a lot of those tours have cobblestone.
Yep.
And your dad's going to eat it one day.
I keep trying to tell him, and then he gets annoyed because he's having a conversation. He's like, oh, I'm on vacation. I'm having a good time. What are you going to do? I just need to make sure I have my camera in hand so I can film it happening.
That's fair. You can make sure he's okay after you get the video.
Yeah. I just hope he doesn't defenestrate himself out of a window backwards.
That's just a tragedy if that happens. But if somebody wants to catch one of your shows or find you online, what's the best way for them to do that?
Sure. It's on Instagram or Twitter at Monkey in Heaven, MonkeyInHeaven. And our show, the weekly show, is in the link in the bio on both of those. So you can check that out. You just go to my link tree and it's got it there. And it's going to be a really fun show. Hopefully Pete will come on soon. We're just going to be having comics on to talk about the news. And eventually we're going to have some journalists coming on to do stand-up comedy as well.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds amazing. I'm definitely super excited to catch it out. And I'd definitely love to do that show sometime.
Yeah, definitely love to have you on. And there's a drinking game involved, so that'll be fun too.
Well, you can't go wrong with that. And if you guys are liking the podcast, you can check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at I Can Steal That. You can find us at ICanSteal That.com. Email us, ICanSteal That@gmail.com. We love keeping in touch with you guys. If you have any episode suggestions, love to hear them. I'm working on one right now from Andrew that is going to be a really, really fun episode. I'm not going to give it away, but it's going to be super cool. And I'm really glad that he suggested that topic. And if you're loving the podcast, give us, hit that subscribe button for sure. Leave us a rating and review on iTunes. It helps us find a bigger audience every single week. And the show's been growing like crazy. So thank you guys all so much for listening. We will be back next week with a brand new episode. This has been...
You forgot to mention one thing.
What's that?
There's a $1,500 level I Can Steal That Patreon. If you want to do a heist with Pete, go to patreon.com/I Can Steal That and find out about doing a heist with him. It's only $1,500 per month.
That is true. That is true. I'm actually going to be restructuring the Patreon. So that $1,500 here will still be around. The other one I think is going to go away for a little bit until I can figure out how to bring you the very best content. I'm working on some really cool exclusive stuff that's going to be Patreon only.
Okay.
But what I would say is don't sign up for it yet. I will make an announcement when it's a good time to sign up for that, because I want to make sure that you're getting the best possible experience. And I feel like if you signed up for it now, I would just be stealing from you.
I was just so excited about mentioning the heist again. And I feel bad now that I,
Don't do that.
I'm going to cry later.
Tier is still available. That is our most exclusive package for discerning fans, but don't sign up for the other one yet. We're going to be redoing that, making it better. I'm working on some cool exclusive interviews, things like that, that I'm going to start doing some video content that'll be available on all the platforms, but I'll let you know when it's a good time to join the Patreon. Until then, check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, @ICanSteal That. Leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. Hit that subscribe button. And if you like the show, tell a friend. Like that's always super helpful. And we will be back next week with a brand new episode. This has been I Can Steal That. Thanks for listening.
Hey, all you guys, girls, and non-binaries, whatever you identify as, I hope you identify as a fan of podcasts, because my name is Spencer Bland.
And I am Jordan Scott Huggins.
And we are the co-host of Bopper Flop.
Bopper Flop is a music podcast. Every episode, we pick a date, we go back and put together the top 10 lists from the Billboard Hot 100 from that date, and we just talk about it. We debate it. Are they bops? Are they flops? Do they hold up? Are they bad? Are they good?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's both.
We have guests from every different industry, actors, musicians, comedians, chefs, whatever you want, we've got it on here. We drop new episodes every Tuesday, and you can listen at bopperflop.com or wherever you get podcasts. You can also follow us on social media @bopperfloppod. That's it, y'all. Every Tuesday, Bopper Flop. Check us out. Goodbye.
Bye.